How do you make space for lattes, wardrobe upgrades, and hair blowouts without derailing your financial security, savings, and future goals? If you're asking yourself this question, you're in the right place. Hey, I'm Sophia, a Vancouver-based podcaster and the founder of In Her Wallet, a financial education and guidance company on a mission to enable women to take lasting control of their finances by leveraging the insights of behavioral psychology. And this podcast is your guide to financial success, equipping you to live your best life without sacrificing your financial future. And in today's episode, we're exploring the rising costs of groceries and dining out. Have you been wondering why filling up your card or dining out has suddenly felt like a luxury splurge? Why do those prices seem to be on an endless climb? And what about surplus food and nearing expiration items that stores need to manage? Where do they end up? To peel back the layers on this, we've got an amazing guest, Sang Lei, the founder of Pego Produce. They are a game changer in Western Canada's grocery space, offering a solution to saving big on groceries without sacrificing quality of your food. Pego Produce is all about embracing those peculiar yet perfectly delicious groceries and giving them a second chance, all while keeping up to 40% off your grocery bills. In our conversation, Sang shares innovative apps emerging in the grocery sector aimed at combating food waste and saving your money, and we tackle a question on many of our minds. In the face of climbing restaurant and grocery bills, how can we maintain our lifestyle and enjoy quality food without stretching our budgets thin? Whether you're dining in, cooking at home, or treating yourself to a night out, this episode is packed with advice to help you navigate the current economic landscape with flair and foresight. And because we love treating our listeners here at In Her Wallet podcast, you can get 50% off your first order from Pego using code INHERWALLET50. Trust me, your wallet and taste buds will thank you later. And with that, let's dive into this conversation. Hi, Sang. Welcome to In Her Wallet podcast. I'm so excited to have you on and talk about groceries and the rising prices and how it affects our daily life.
Yeah, I'm so excited to be here as well. Thanks for having me, Sophia.
You're most welcome. Can you tell us a bit more about yourself first?
I'm the co-founder of Pego, which is Western Canada's first delivery service for peculiar and surplus food. Our goal is to fight food waste by delivering these mystery boxes of mystery groceries at up to 40% off retail prices. Why we do so is there's a lot of like billions of dollars worth of surplus and imperfect, cosmetically imperfect food being wasted every year. And what we're doing is diverting these from, like, instead of going to waste, they're going to happy customer and feeding them. Before I started my company, I worked in tech, in product management and marketing as well. And I guess a fun fact is I started my company while in university because I was, I guess, annoyed at myself for, you know, not knowing to prep food well enough. So wasting food and therefore wasting not only my money, but also like resources and energy that went into producing these food for us. And that prompted me to look into this as a passion project, which pan out into a company over the pandemic. Like last year, we sold the company to Fresh Prep Foods, which is Canada's most sustainable meal kit company, and now operating as a sister company underneath Fresh Prep.
Oh my God, I'm so excited for you. And there are so many questions I want to ask you right from that intro. Congratulations, Sang, on everything that you've accomplished. I mean, we've met back in university and it's been so inspiring to watch your journey, build a company and now sell it while you're still under 25. So I'll definitely be asking you questions about business later on. But first, let's talk about how to navigate the rise of grocery and restaurant bills with style. As someone who is on the other side of this industry, can you tell us about why grocery prices have been increasing so rapidly for the past couple of years. I went to a grocery store, I think a couple of days ago, and the cucumber is $5 now, organic cucumber. And I was like, what is happening?
I know. And I just remember like when I first came to Canada, so I was born and raised in Vietnam. I came here for school, just like you, Sophia. And yeah, I remember like kind of like a random example, but when I first came here, bubble tea was like $5. And then now it's like $8, like 6 years later.
It's same with coffee. Coffee used to be like $4.50. Now it's like $6, $7, depending on the size.
For sure.
So what's influencing all of this? I mean, groceries is a whole different example because I think a lot of us go to a grocery store and we get same things like regularly, milk, eggs. So it's very easy to track and notice when the price increases. What is causing all of this?
Yeah, I think there's an interesting mix of reasons. Obviously, we have socio-political reasons, like for example, if there are wars in countries or like policies made in countries where they export a lot of like supplies to the world, like agriculture scene in general, that is going to affect like pricing, for example. And I think we've seen, you know, like very unstable socio-economic condition in the last couple of years in various parts of the world. Then there's also extreme weather events, which is becoming more and more common with climate change, right? For example, in British Columbia alone, if we like think back in the last few years, we've had huge heat waves in the summer where it's not supposed to happen, given that we are in like a temperate climate area, right? So things like that could definitely affect supplies. So to give you a very specific example, the year I first started my company, which is 2021, summer of 2021, that was when we had like the biggest heat wave in a while, I think, if I kind of just trace back my last couple of years here. And we had this zucchini supplier. He was just a local farmer. And we would source zucchini from him. And then 1 week we just turn up and then all of his crops are wiped out because of how hot it has become.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And that, you know, obviously it's an inconvenience for us, but then it's their livelihood, right? So it's affecting a lot of people all along the supply chain as well. So that is going to be more and more common, more flooding, more like dry weather in the summer. All of that can factor into our like agricultural supply chain and how it will how we produce food in general, which is why I think vertical farming and like indoor farming will be quite crucial as the next step to climate proof our food supply. There's also like market speculation, I guess. So it's interesting because in the world of produce, at least specifically, it also operates on market pricing. So the price can go up and down depending on demand. So we never are able to kind of like pinpoint a specific like range, I guess. But then that's definitely like a big learning I had when I first came to the industry, because I thought it's a bit more stable. But yeah, and then also inflation happening in the last couple of years as well, and just like cost of living is rising above, you know, like our wages, for example. Currency fluctuations obviously can affect import and export, and then just like energy costs and everything are increasing our whole input costs to produce food as well. And I think a big one is just supply chain disruption in general, which we obviously saw a lot during COVID. And then, for example, in BC alone, we see that in like late 2021, there was a huge like flooding landslide event that broke off a lot of the main roads. And for Canada specifically, we actually only have one like main road to like lead from east to west. And that's the road we use to transport all like our food, basically. So if it's broken off, then you have to transfer by air, which is a lot more expensive, or you just have to wait a long time. So that's why we had a huge influx of supplies when that event happened, and like a lot of grocery stores were emptied out or couldn't get food. But then since PECO, we work with the surplus food, we suddenly have like a huge, like 10x amount that we are now dealing with. So yeah, I think it's a combination of all of those factors together. It's hard to kind of pinpoint exactly one, but definitely a bit alarming and good to keep an eye on.
Because I mean, if I think about it, in the past, I don't remember a time when I would see grocery prices rise so rapidly. And I think just everything happened all at once in the past couple of years, especially post-COVID. So is it right to assume that maybe things will slow down and we'll reach some form of plateau at some point?
That's a great question. I don't know if I have an answer for that. I think especially in Canada, where we like don't have a ton of like big player in the grocery space, there's like one or two. They have a lot of market power in that sense to kind of dictate the price accordingly. I think they have definitely come into trouble in the last couple of years, just from, you know, public outreach and also just policymakers in general. I hope that our government will put in some policy in place to kind of maybe put a price ceiling to these increases, or more policy in terms of, for example, managing food waste better. There's a lot of grocery store, for example, that would throw out food even before their best before date. Because then there, if you look at like food packaging, right, usually there would be a best before date and maybe a date that they have to sell by, which is a different date, usually earlier than best before for grocery store. And a lot of these, I think, came from worries that there's like legal repercussions from, you know, like, for example, like giving away these excess food. A lot of these major grocers have adopted practice to donate them or give them away at basically no cost, but I think there's a lot of work to be done there. I know that in Europe, for example, France specifically, they have banned grocery store from just throwing out food in general, and that has helped a lot with just like the food waste and also food insecurity crisis. Especially as someone who worked in this space, I know that a lot of food are being thrown away, like even though they are still good to eat. Just because of like legal worries, or maybe there just isn't enough like streamlined process to kind of move it from one primary market to a secondary market yet, which is kind of where PECO is stepping in.
So I want to follow up with a question. What does normally happen to vegetables and fruits and other groceries that are not being sold in grocery stores? That's actually such like an interesting thing. I don't think I've ever thought about that.
Yeah. So I guess with perishables, it could range a lot in conditions. So for example, if it's like really close to composting, then a lot of them will just be either composted or thrown out to like landfills. And they actually usually contract a third party service to take care of these wastage. So they would dump it out accordingly. Some of that, if usually it's more dry goods that are more shelf stable, that would be donated to, let's say, charities or organizations in need. And I know a couple that are very active in this area. For example, in Vancouver, there's like the Food Stash Foundation or the Vancouver Food Runners that take care of this segment. And then there's also ones that are more consumer facing, I guess. So in recent years, there's been innovation in the space. So if you've heard of Too Good To Go or Flash Food, those are two mobile apps that allow you to shop mystery bags, essentially, of items ranging from grocery store to bakeries and whatnot that is sold for a very cheap price. Usually they're like very close to the end of their shelf life. Like you have to like maybe process them right away. And obviously it's a mystery bag, so you don't know what you are getting. kind of similar to our concept. But then for Petco, we, since we work more with suppliers up in the food chain, our food is fresher versus, you know, going through the whole process of like wholesaler, transportation, retailer, sitting there for a while, and then selling to consumer. So that's kind of the distinction between us versus the apps that we're talking about.
And I think you also mentioned that Petco brings the cosmetically imperfect foods to the table. Can you explain what that means? Because I don't think I've heard of that definition before either.
For sure. Yeah. So when I first looked into the problem of food waste, that was one of the first area that I looked into. So you might have heard of the term imperfect food, for example, which is coined, I think, pretty recently, which refer to food that like usually fruit and vegetables that look a little funky. So for example, I don't know, like a carrot that has two legs or just something that looks a little deformed.
Yeah.
It also applies to things that are bruised or maybe have like scratches and therefore not as cosmetically appealing. But the interesting thing is when I first looked into this problem, I thought that is a big part of the food waste crisis. But when you work in the industry for a bit longer, you actually realize that it's a bit more nuanced in the sense that the cosmetically imperfect food actually only maybe take up around 10 to 20% of like overall food waste. And this data is not like super scientifically studied, but from like anecdotal evidence, I talked to like farmers and wholesaler and just from my experience working in this space. But the reason why is because when farmers kind of see these like deformation, it's hard to catch them when you go through the whole batch. But then when you do catch them at the farm, for example, you know that you can't quite sell them. So they will just not harvest it and let it stay at the farm because the cost of harvesting and transporting them would probably outweigh the price you can sell them for example. So what they do is they usually maybe let it compost there, or they harvest that and upcycle them into, let's say, jam or like other items.
Right. Yeah.
There are innovations there. However, the bulk of food waste actually is actually surplus food, which is crazy to think about because we still have obvious, you know, like hungers in the world. But we produce enough food to feed, you know, the whole global population. So really, that disconnect comes from like the supply chain and the food distribution, essentially. So for example, because obviously supply and demand forecasting it's a science, but it's also an art to some to some degree. I think it's hard to kind of exactly match up, especially when you're buying in bulk and there's like set amounts and you need to buy it, right? So because of that, there usually is a disconnect between wholesaler or farmers who grow and get the food and the retailer or food operators who buy from them. And therefore, usually, let's say, if you order like, we've had a very specific example where our supplier called us up and say that we have like 16,000 pounds of bananas they need to get rid of ASAP. And the reason why is because they were going to sell that to a grocery store, but then the grocery store didn't want to take them anymore because the banana has now turned yellow instead of green. So basically you can keep them for like a lesser amount of time at the store.
Shorter amount of time.
Yeah. But it's like, you can still eat them, right?
I run into this problem very often because especially with avocados, because sometimes I would run out and I'd go and I'm looking for the one that's already ripe, but they're all so hard and you have to wait like 3-4 days. So I often end up like not having an avocado in my meal because there's just no ripe avocados in the city.
Yeah, I know. That's such an interesting problem too. But I guess a hack is if you have banana, you can put banana and avocado together because that bananas release ethylene gas and that speed up the process of ripening an avocado.
Really? Okay. Oh my God. I love this hack.
Yeah. But yeah, I guess the short answer is basically there is a mismatch in demand and supply forecasting. So that's why there's surplus food there. Mm-hmm. And then a lot of times food are perishable. So if you don't time it right, or maybe when transportation, maybe it gets hotter than expected in the trunk, then that will also speed up the process of like ripeness and all of that. And the condition you deliver to the consumer or to the retailer is not as expected. And that's why there is a mismatch there.
Let's make it clear, where does Beko get their food from? Is it from the suppliers or is it from grocery stores? I just want to make it clear that the food that you guys include in your subscription is not the food that's about to expire. It's actually good food, but it's just cosmetically imperfect, as what we explained.
For sure, yeah. So the main distinction is, especially before the acquisition, we source only from farmers and like wholesalers. So essentially very up there in the supply chain. So you can expect basically mostly surplus food. So they look fine, just as what you would expect in the grocery store. And sometimes cosmetically imperfect food. So some bruising, some maybe ripeness, or like scratches, things like that. So usually our food would be as fresh, if not fresher, than grocery store. After the acquisition, now we have a mix of supplies. Part of it come from our parent company, Fresh Prep, which is a meal kit company. So they also buy in bulk in these from wholesaler for like ingredients and whatnot. And they also have like surplus, as with any food service business. We funnel that into our boxes as a way to help reduce food waste, but we also supplement with supplies from farmers and wholesaler that we have previous relationship with as well.
Mm-hmm. And Sang, in what ways can making food choices like going for peculiar foods help you manage your grocery and food expenses in general?
Absolutely. So the thing with like peculiar, which is what we used to call imperfect food or surplus food, is these are things that wouldn't have made it to like grocery store in the first place. So that's why it is cheaper, even though they're practically the same thing. You just can't choose what exactly goes into your box. Because of this, everything is up to 40% off grocery store prices, because there's an element of, you know, like them not being able to make it there and then them being a mystery. It would be a great way for you not to only save money, but also to help reduce the food waste crisis and, you know, make a practical impact on our food supply chain, you know, by just doing your day-to-day practices of grocery shopping and cooking and whatnot.
Yes, for sure. Do you think it's possible to not compromise the quality of food without having to invest a lot of money and being able to stay within the budget? And maybe what are some actionable tips around that with using platforms like Beko?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the thing with using platform like Beko or mystery boxes in general, obviously you can't choose what to prep for exactly. So you kind of will have to wing it based on what you see, which is obviously not for everyone. I would say a hack I do sometimes, is I'm not the greatest cook either, is I would just chat GPT the ingredients that I have. And I'm like, with these ingredients, what can I make? And then it spit out some sort of recipe for me to do, which is really handy for sure. We also have a functionality on our website, pecoproduce.com, called In Your Bag. And then when you click on there, you can see like all the items that you might be able to see in your box and their related recipe. So that's another way to go about it if you are, you know, shopping from a mystery box service. Otherwise, I think it's most important at the end of the day to know yourself and like know what type of consumer you are. I think for me, for example, I realized that whenever I meal plan, I don't like to eat the same thing for more than three times, for example. Or I actually consume a bit less than I like plan for. So with that knowledge, for example, I add a little bit of a buffer, and then maybe I buy 90% of what I need instead of the 100% that I thought I would need. And I try to kind of plan it accordingly, meal plan accordingly, so that I have at least like two recipe a week that I can rotate around, so I'm not sick of doing so. If you're someone who eats out a lot, for example, then, you know, obviously it's, I guess you have two ways to go about it. You can either want to meal prep at home more, which you can maybe use meal kit service to complement that, because maybe you're not that great at cooking or you don't like figuring out recipe, then use meal kit service as a way to ease into cooking at home. Or if you've just accepted the fact that you like to eat out a lot, then find ways to kind of recoup that money. I think there's like credit cards out there that can give you a lot of cash back or like points for, for example, like Amex Cobalt is a good example, then, you know, at least you're getting some sort of money back for, you know, eating out and just knowing your consuming habits in general. I think that's really the key to like whether meal planning, grocery shopping, or eating out.
I think that's a great tip. What you said, you just need to know yourself well. I know for me and my partner, we are Sunday or Monday is usually our grocery day. And I know that we spend about $160, $180, but I get everything for the week ahead, from meat to spices and fruits and vegetables. And I kind of, the same way as you said, I try to rotate recipes without having to really put a lot of, you know, labor into thinking during the week what I need to do and what do I need to attend or like explore something new and be able to focus on my work. So I think that's definitely a great tip. And I really like what you said, try to plan out for a little bit. I actually tried to buy a little bit less than what you think you need, because during the week you might have unexpected dining out experiences. And also when we travel, I always try to keep that in mind and, you know, try to not buy a lot of groceries if I know we'll be traveling in the next couple of weeks. So we finish everything before we have to go.
Yes, I think that's a great tip. Yeah, like knowing your schedule as well. Like if you have... if you tend to eat out with like coworkers during like the day in office or like you're traveling, I think that's a great, great call out.
Yeah. Yeah. What do you think are some of the ways we can navigate these rising prices for groceries and dining out in style? Do you have any tips around that area? For me personally, I love watching those videos on YouTube when you do like a, like they say you're in your hosting era and you host your friends at home and you get to be creative because you get to set up your table nicely and work on that and cook a meal and have some wine. I mean, when you go out, those alcohol prices can really add up because a cocktail is like what, $20-$22 now. So if you're having two, three cocktails, there you go. That's like $60 already. So what are your ideas, or have you found any creative ways to navigate those rising prices in style?
Yeah, that's such an interesting question. I love you sharing your experience there as well. I think when you mentioned hosting era, that's like, I was like, oh my God, that's me. Especially like stepping more into adulthood. And I think everyone's so busy and we're, yes, we can like dine out and everything, but it's more intimate almost. And also just a different set of experience to host different things. So for example, for me, I've really kind of leaned into that, especially this year. I've hosted like potlucks, I've hosted like board games. And then this weekend, actually, I'm hosting a coffee shop and bakery hangout at mine.
That's so where exciting.
I'll be like making coffee. My roommate will be making like baked goods. And then friends will just kind of come and like hang out.
Instead of going to- God.
Yeah. So I think that's one way to go about it. I think spinning it into more of like an activity that you can do with friends instead of just going out to eat, for example. Obviously exploring like solution that can help you with your day-to-day better. So maybe that is a mix of getting like mystery groceries plus meal kit plus like just grocery shopping traditionally, right? Like just, it doesn't have to be one and all. I think you can combine a lot of them as a way to kind of trim down on your grocery costs while still kind of maintaining the lifestyle that you want, I would say. And as I mentioned a bit earlier, looking into credit cards that complement your lifestyle. So like knowing what type of consumer you are, if you spend a lot on like one category, then get cards that can help you get more money back in that regard, and then use that money to fund other things that you want, I would say.
I like how you're bringing credit cards into our conversation and giving advice around that, because we actually, at the time we'll be releasing your episode, we would have already have released an episode about credit cards and how to choose the best credit cards for you, and we've talked about that on That's that awesome. Episode. So this is going to tie in really well together. My philosophy, I really like how you said, you know, try to frame your food experience around an activity. So doing board games, or, you know, trying to do a picnic, or doing a coffee and bakery date, like you mentioned. For me also, the way I plan for my dining out kind of expenses, I try not to fit everything in. I would rather dine in at home majority of the time, but then really go all out, if I may say so, and enjoy a nice restaurant when I'm going out, to really go for that experience. Because for me, when I'm going out, it's more about the experience of getting dressed up, of like enjoying a nice cocktail, letting myself eat some dessert, and yeah, things like that.
Yeah, I think that's such a great call out, because at the end of the day, right, like when making financial decisions, we all have different priorities. So my partner asked me a very interesting question, actually just yesterday. He was like, if you have to spend $10,000 on either a flight, a hotel, or a restaurant, what would you spend it on? And I was like, huh, that's a great question, because we would probably have different answer, right, depending on what we value more. And his answer,
for example, what's the answer?
I think I said hotel, because in my mind, I was like, I guess you can do more things at a hotel rather than like you can go to a spa, you can, I don't know, get like room service, things like that. So yeah. In my mind, it was like more bang for my buck, because I would have more variety of experiences. But then for him, he said a restaurant, because he would rather spend more, like, because if you're traveling, you'd probably be out all day, which is so fair. And then he'd rather spend more on like local cuisines, for example.
Yeah.
But then
someone
else might say they would rather have an experience, like a good experience on a long haul flight. So they would spend it on a flight. So at the end of the day, I think the takeaway from that discussion is that it's such a personal decision at the end of the day for like as to where you put your money. So knowing yourself and knowing what you value will really help you get the most bang for your buck, depending on your like budgeting.
Totally, I agree with you. I was going to say I would add the fourth answer option to that question. I recently saw a reel. Clearly, I'm spending a lot of time on social media because I keep referencing TikTok and reels. But I saw this reel that said, I'm not going to spend $10,000 on a business class flight. I'm rather going to spend it on a Chanel or Hermes bag, because it's going to grow in value, or like a Rolex watch, because it's going to grow in value. And instead of, you know, spending that in, I don't know, how long that flight is, that bag's going to grow in value, and I'm going to sell it later on and profit.
It's girl mapping for sure.
Girl mapping. Yes. Yeah.
But I totally see that argument too, because I don't know, like a Chanel bag has appreciated so much in value, especially in recent years, right?
Exactly. Exactly. And I really like, I mean, you can pass that on to generations, because fashion is cyclical as well. So everything comes back, and if you want to do that. Okay, well, Sang, do you have any final tips for our audience on how they can navigate their grocery bills?
Yeah, I think like if I can really hone it down to like one key takeaway, is know yourself and know your spending habits, and know your like daily activities, how you'd like to live your life, and then plan accordingly. Remember that it's not a one for all solution. So feel free to kind of take a bit of this and a bit of that and piece them together to make an ideal grocery shopping experience and budgeting for yourself.
I want to also end with some rapid fire questions that we actually didn't do in the beginning. I wanted to leave them till the end, trying to test different things with the podcast. But tell me, if you look back, what's the one purchase that stands out as the absolute best thing you've ever spent money on?
That is so hard. Oh my goodness. I was initially going to say my laptop because it's expensive, but it brings so much utility. But then I think as a person, I really value like traveling and just experiences. So like going back to that $10,000 question that we had earlier, if I could add a fourth option maybe to that set of question, I'd probably spend $10,000 on an experience instead. I would say all of my traveling purchases is worth it for me. Like they definitely add up over the time, but then I think I've found creative ways to kind of save on that. For example, like going to places where friends are that I can crash with them, or utilizing like business trips and my like per diem spend as a way to like combine like life and work, I guess. I guess all my traveling expenses would be my answer to this question.
I really like how you're trying to be creative in literally every area of your life, from groceries to travel, and that's a really good way to be moving through this world. Saying, does your budget have any guilty pleasures? I mean, I think everyone does. Is there anything that you spend on regularly that you're not sorry about?
That's a good question. I think traveling is definitely part of it, though I'm trying to be more disciplined about it, and especially utilizing more of my credit card points, for example, to subsidize that. But I think eating out is probably more of the recurring expenses. I've just come to accept that I'm a foodie and I like to eat out and I like different cuisines. I'm currently in my shawarma phase. Like I've been eating shawarma straight now. And I'm like
I haven't given a shawarma advice on the In Her Wallet podcast before, but my favorite spot is on Robson Street across from Whole Foods. Hole in the wall. I have no idea what's it called. It's like a hole in the wall. It's a family spot. It's like a son and a mother duo. And I think there's a second brother as well. Mwah. It's so good. It's across the street from Whole Foods on Robson Street.
Okay. I will have to check that out. I think my favorite spot is Mr. Greek on Granville. I've come there so often the past 2 weeks. And then at this point, the shopkeeper was like, you know, if you want free food, just let us know.
I like it. Loyal customer. I mean, at the end of the day, we are talking about food advice today. So here you go.
Yeah. So I would say eating out is probably like my guilty pleasure. But then if I know myself and I budget accordingly and I plan accordingly for other aspects, then I think it's under control.
Yeah. And to wrap this up, tell me, what's a financial milestone you have achieved that made you feel like a total money boss in your life?
Ooh, good question. I think like the first ever milestone of that was like when I finished my first internship. And then I was like, wow, I have like adult money now, even though I'm a teenager, I guess. But then, yeah, I guess the
biggest... What'd you spend it on? Do you remember?
I think I treated my family out to like a nice dinner. And then I bought myself my first designer bag.
Nice.
Kind of going
Talking
back
to designer them. Bags. We're going back to them.
I know. They do appreciate in value, I hope. As long as you can sell them, right?
Yes.
And I think like more recently, it's obviously like selling my first company and then starting my full-time job out of school with the parent company that acquired Pecco. That definitely made me feel like a full adult. It's just nice to be able to kind of give back and like maybe like treat your family and friends and loved ones out to more nice things.
I'm so inspired by you. I mean, it's incredible what you have accomplished in such a young age. And I can't help but ask you any entrepreneurship advice that you have for women listening to us who want to start their own business. Do you have anything that you want to share?
Yeah, well, first of all, very kind of you to say that. And I could say the same for you. Like, I know we've known each other for a couple of years now, and it's really cool to see you transform from like back then a university student to like a corporate professional and then now a girl boss, a startup founder as well. So likewise for me. I think the piece of advice that I have is don't be afraid to take up space, and you'll never know the answer until you ask for it. I think a lot of times women are very, you know, considerate, right? And very maybe like care a lot about others and what they think and whatnot. And sometimes I've just learned this over the years that if you think you deserve something, you've just got to hustle and ask for it. You've got to ask for your space at the table. And then even if you think whatever you're asking for is a bit out there, just go for it. Worst thing they can say is no, and then you'll just move on to the next thing. And I think that's exactly been adopting, the especially in the last couple of years.
I love this tip and insight. It's one of my personal rules that I live by. No one's going to hurt you if you're just going to ask. So keep doing that until you hear yes. So Sang, thank you so much for coming onto the In Her Wallet podcast. It's one of the most genuine and fun conversations we've had here. And I can't wait to share it with our audience. Thank you for joining me.
Thanks for having me today. It was a blast.
Thank you for tuning into In Her Wallet. If today's episode inspired you or gave you a new perspective, it would mean so much to me if you followed us on your podcasting platform of choice, shared this episode with your friends, and left a 5-star rating and review. I want this episode to serve as a reminder that you're not alone in your financial journey. This podcast is your guide to financial success, equipping you to live your best life without sacrificing your financial future. It was Sophia with you this Wednesday, and I will see you next week.